Hello, I'm Mercedes Stevenson, and you're listening to The West Block. All eyes are on the Mideast, searching for any clues that Iran will strike back at Israel. This after Israel was the latest of the two to lash out late last week, raising tensions in the region to potentially catastrophic levels.
We're committed to Israel's security. We're also committed to de-escalating.
What could this mean for the future of the Middle East? Joining me now is Jonathan Panikoff, director of the Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative at the Atlantic Council. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got an extensive background in defense, intelligence, and security. This is obviously a situation that everyone is watching with great concern, anticipating what Iran might do next. What kind of response do you think we could see from the Iranian regime?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Right now, it would appear that the Iranians really are trying to downplay this, and so you may not see a particularly robust response, if any at all. The propaganda that you've seen coming out of Iran actually is that everything is normal, that the Israelis were humiliated, that there was a quadcopter or a drone that the Iran's air defense took out. And so I think you're really seeing Iran try to put this away and not have a big war over this, for instance. Iran probably is not ready for massive escalation in a war. And Israel certainly doesn't want it at a time when they're also struggling to finalize things in Gaza and figure out what to do about Rafah.
I think that's so interesting because, of course, one of the natural concerns here is, does this become a regional war? But it does seem like both players don't want that because they could have gone to a war by now. But it could, of course, still happen. How controlled are these decisions about what the targets are and what happens in terms of the back and forth we've seen remaining a back and forth versus an escalation?
Yeah, it's a great point. The reality is, I think that on the Iranian side, their initial reaction last weekend to Israeli strikes of General Zahedi in Syria was quite the escalation. Over 300 missiles, cruise and ballistic missiles, UAVs launched against Israel. It was truly unprecedented, and the first, obviously, direct strike by Iran on Israel. I think Israel's response has been very, very cautious here and very calculated intentionally. It is not a proportional response, but it is a symmetric response, meaning Israel hit what is clearly a military base without civilians around. It had no intention to escalate this. And it's really saying to the Iranians, look, we can hit you. You are not allowed to target us with impunity. No matter what you say publicly, your retaliation is going to be. No matter what our allies prefer, we are not going to allow ourselves to be targeted, and we will strike back if you strike us. But we're giving you an out here. We have no interest in escalating if you don't want to escalate. And so it's really now in the Iranians' court to make a decision about whether or not they feel a need to strike Israel again or to let it go.
This is, in the case of the Iranian regime, a regime that wants to develop nuclear weapons. So far, we haven't seen evidence that's happened, and the IAEA came out and said no nuclear sites had been struck, which was apparently a deal that Israel and the U.S. had come to as well, that if Israel retaliated, they would not go after nuclear sites because of that escalation. Israel is a nuclear power, however. What role do those nuclear weapons have in potentially making this a more dangerous situation because we're talking about nukes, or a calmer situation because of the deterrent value that nuclear weapons have?
Sure. Well, because not both of them have nuclear weapons, it's a completely asymmetric relationship right now. Obviously, there would be a huge global outcry if Israel ever used nuclear weapons against Iran, and there's no indication that they will. This is largely a deterrent for Israel in terms of their possession of nuclear weapons, something they've had for years. On the Iranian side, though, Iran has been very, very delicate back and forth about whether or not it actually wants to develop a nuclear weapon. The truth of the matter is right now they're probably somewhere between 10 and 14 days away from having enough enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon. It would be crude. They're still probably 18 to 24 months away from weaponization, actually being able to have a nuclear-capable warhead put on a traditional missile. That's not an easy thing to do. It takes some work. And that's what you're seeing international organizations say. They haven't really seen that progress. But obviously, Iran really views its nuclear program as one of the best pieces of leverage that it has, not only against Israel, but against the with the international community. And so the reality is, if Israel were to strike it, there's been years of discussions about what would happen, it would almost certainly trigger a much, much bigger conflict and a much bigger war. It's hard to imagine the Iranians letting that go at all.
What kind of targets do you think Iran is looking at in Israel right now? I mean, they knew that the Israelis had the capability to shoot down a lot of their drones and missiles, and they did, thanks to a very aggressive defensive system, much of which has been provided by the United States. So what sort of targets might we see?
Yeah, I think it really depends on what it is Iran is trying to do. So in other words, once you're starting to target Tel Aviv or Haifa, Eilat, you're talking about really hitting civilian populations, and that is going to lead to an all-out war. What we saw really with Iran, especially over last weekend, is an effort to try and target entities that were really much more military in focus or independently or in conjunction with Hezbollah, the Iranian proxy obviously based in Lebanon, to target the Golan Heights areas that are disputed. I think if Iran keeps it to military targets, it does slightly change the calculus. And I have no doubt that the Iranians are building a target list that probably includes both military targets for a future conflict that is somewhat contained, civilian targets that is much broader. There's a separate list probably for Hezbollah as well, that they really work in concert together. And so you've seen rumors, for instance, that Hezbollah might target Israeli offshore gas platforms, or even possibly target Dimona, where Israel's nuclear program is said to be headquartered.
I know that both Israel and Iran will have allies and regional powers whispering in their ear. Who will Israel and Iran be talking to, and what messages do you think those countries will be sending them?
For Israel, it's obviously the U.S. The Israeli-U.S. relationship is long and has been very strong, but it also is other allies, the United Kingdom, Germany. My guess is the message will be what it has been. They really, right, immediately are trying to avoid a regional war, but they will continue to come to Israel's defense in the event that it is attacked again. But it has, they've got no interest in Israel conducting offensive operations. On the other side, Iran is in a little bit of a place of flux. The Iranian-Russian relationship has gotten much, much closer throughout the Russian war in Ukraine, and it's Iranian drones that Russia is largely using in Ukraine. But there's questions about whether that's just tactical or there's actually a strategic nature to it. Will Russia come and meaningfully support Iran in the event of a conflict? Will China provide support to Iran? Probably not. China's the biggest importer of Iranian oil, and actually a conflict is the last thing that China wants to see in the region because it would disrupt their oil flows and economic growth. And so you're going to hear on the Iranian side, largely from Russia, largely from China, but the messages are different between the U.S. and Israel, which are obviously such close allies and Europeans, versus Russia, China, and Iran, where it's a lot more transactional of a relationship.
Really interesting information and context. Thank you so much for joining us. As the federal budget is now being analyzed by experts, a big flag is the change to the capital gains tax. And it could hit some middle-class Canadians hard. As a way to increase its own revenue, the government announced that it would increase the inclusion rate of capital gains for businesses. And for individuals, well, if you sell assets like, say, a second property at a price over $250,000, you'll now pay more too, up from one-half to two-thirds. To tell us more about this, we asked Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland to come on the show, as we have several times this season and last. But again, she has not accepted. The last time she appeared on the West Block was late 2022. The Conservatives also declined to come on and talk about the budget with us today. Unfortunate, since you would think the politicians would want to talk about this. So instead, With their take, we have our panel who are going to break it all down for us. We're joined now by Lisa Raitt, former conservative cabinet minister, and John Manley, former liberal cabinet minister. Both of you have lots of experience with budgets and the economy, so I couldn't wait to hear what your take is on this budget. John, you're the former liberal, so I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts?
Well, a couple of areas that are of concern. I mean, this is a budget that tried to do a lot of things, and that's always challenging, and it's really